come back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place.
Hello everyone, this is Sean Hennis with the Anime Torchcast, the post-Soviet Anime Torchcast, here on January 20th, 2008. Joining me as always, or I should say as seldom, since we haven't done this since, what, UFC 77 or something? is Jerry Cataline. Jerry, how's it going?
It is going well, Sean. It's good to be back in the saddle with you, as they say, in my new state of residence. All is well. How's it going up there?
Going good. It is cold. It's very, very cold up here. It's 1 degree, which I imagine is a little bit colder than it is down in Florida.
Yeah, it's a little chilly here in Florida. I think currently it's about 62 degrees down here, and I'm looking for my sweater.
So you've gotten used to the weather down there, is what you're telling me.
It's wonderful. I have no complaints, believe me. None whatsoever.
That's good. That's good. Well, we had a pretty good card last night in UFC 80. It didn't look like it was going to be a whole lot beforehand, other than the lightweight title fight, but it turned into a pretty solid card.
I think so, too. It's probably one of the few cards in recent memory that I really came away from it thinking, geez, I can't wait for the next card. And golly, I got my $40 worth. And I think the biggest thing, at least my first thought at the end of the card, was we nearly saw the entire card. I mean, with the exception of the Stout Eklund fight, you got to see 8 out of the 9 fights. And and whether that was because there were a lot of early stoppages, early second-round stoppages, first-round stoppages, I don't know. But I was really impressed with Zuffa throwing 8 fights at us last night. I was impressed when they got to 7. I was stunned to see them bring out Hardonk Robinson with 10 minutes, 15 minutes to go in the broadcast.
And from what I hear, the Stout Eklund fight was pretty much a snooze fest anyway. So
that's the reviews I've been reading.
Yeah,
no, that's true. But I mean, considering all the other fireworks on the card, I mean, you really couldn't go away from this card thinking you didn't get your money's worth. And I agree with you. To look at it from the beginning, to look at it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, you're thinking, geez, you know, what do I really want to see on this? I mean, if you're a casual fan, it wasn't much to draw you in.
Yeah, absolutely, especially if you don't have much of a sense of history with BJ Penn. You know, for people that have followed the sport or at least, you know, watched old events, you know, you see BJ Penn, who's had an interesting history anyway, and here he's in his third lightweight title shot, you know, having lost this early, you know, having gone to a draw in his second shot and lost in his first shot against Jens Pulver.
Right.
And people are still saying he's one of the best fighters in the world, and if you don't know the history, you're thinking this guy doesn't have a lot of fights. Why are they, you know, why has he got this this big hype behind him? So
that's true. But if you go through, you know, BJ's record, there aren't a whole lot of bad fighters on his record. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Draw.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are very few fighters BJ Penn has fought that aren't or haven't been world champions at one point or another.
Yeah.
So I mean, when he fights, you're an elite fighter if you're in the cage or the ring with BJ Penn.
Yeah, for sure.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, and different weight classes too. I mean, he's all over the place as far as that goes.
He's a freak. I mean, and I thought he looked as physically good as I've seen him look in the last 4 or 5 fights that I've seen him in.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think he had the opportunity to show much against Pulver per se. But, boy, he looked awful good against Joe Stevenson in terms of just how he was moving. Physically, he looked good. He's going to pose some problems for Shirk. Before I saw that fight last night, I thought Shirk was a clear, you know, 3-2 favorite over Penn just by virtue of Shirk's ability to take him down and be just kind of a cardio monster. But, boy, I was impressed with the way BJ looked the last night.
Yeah. Yeah, let's jump right into that fight, into the Penn Stevenson fight.
Might as well.
And you started giving me some thoughts on that one. What are your thoughts on that fight?
You know, the headline is going to be BJ Penn wins, you know, in the second round, and obviously the wrestling-esque crimson mask of Joe Stevenson to wind that fight down. But I think going away, I really earned a lot of respect for Joe Stevenson.
Yeah.
the look when the camera panned in on his face to start the second round, you could just see in his eyes, I'm going out swinging. And there was just no quit, and I earned 2,000% respect for Joe Stevenson, and I think he is going to be, when BJ Penn decides to move weight classes, or when Penn decides that he's had enough and, you know, the strap's up for grabs again, Joe Stevenson is your next lightweight champ. There's no doubt in my mind. I you know, all the lightweight fights we've seen over the last 6 months, I just don't see anybody that's going to run with Stevenson. Right now, BJ is on another level. I think, you know, just the way Penn handled the ground game, he got mount on Stevenson twice, but still really couldn't put him away. And, I mean, you could talk about that cut, and, you know, the cut didn't stop the fight, but, you know, figuratively, the cut stopped the fight.
Yeah.
You know, but I you know, that's Penn, as far as I'm concerned right now, that's Penn's division until he doesn't want it anymore. And when he's done, I think it's Stevenson's turn. Where Shirk comes into all this, he's got his work cut right out for him, man. I mean, I thought the face off in the octagon after BJ called out Shirk was fascinating, but
great build up.
It's great build up. And it was interesting. It was nice because you could actually see in terms of one thing that I find that when we look at these fights, you don't realize how the fighters match up against each other size-wise. Like, you can look at stats and reach and whatnot, but when you see them standing next to each other, you really get the sense of who's bigger than who.
Yeah.
And to me, I had a hard time seeing where Shirk's going to be able to really take BJ down. I think he's going to try. And truthfully, I mean, you know, Shirk's history suggests that he's going to be clearly the better guy as far as endurance and cardio and pace and whatnot, but BJ looks like he is, you know, Penn has looked like he has just redetermined that this is his division and he's going to dominate this division until he doesn't want to anymore. And that's bad news for Sean Shirk as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I do want to get to the matchup with Shirk and Penn in a second, but I want to stay with the Stevenson-Penn fight for just a little bit longer. Like what you said,
yeah, sure.
With Stevenson coming out in that second round, I absolutely agree with you. Stevenson's a guy, I didn't know too much about him before his stint on The Ultimate Fighter at welterweight, you know. But since then, you know, when he was coming out of The Ultimate Fighter fighting at welterweight, you know, when he fought Luke Kumo, you know, he kind of looked like he was a little bit lackadaisical and fought Josh Neer and lost that decision. Didn't look very good then either. And since he's come to lightweight, obviously he's looked a lot better, you know, taking out Eve Edwards, taking out Kurt Pellegrino, in a really impressive decision victory, and taking out, you know, Mishima with a guillotine and Gallard with a guillotine. And, you know, he was the guy that, before he moved to lightweight, seemed like, you know, I'm pretty, you know, naturally talented, but didn't seem to have all the heart, or at least in his UFC appearances. But, man, he put all those thoughts to rest with this fight. I mean, he was there was no quit at all in Joe Stevenson.
There's a lot of guys that would have mailed it in with that cut. I was shocked
they
didn't stop the fight. I thought for sure that when Herb Dean brought him over the corner and the doc went up there to look at that cut, because you could tell. I mean, you know, he had a little bit. You know, you could tell that was a bleeder. As I like to say in my line of profession. That was a bleeder. you can stuff all the epinephrine jelly in there you want, and that's not going to stop bleeding until you throw some nylon in there. And that, you know, I give him all the credit in the world. I give the doc credit for letting Joe go out and steal the fight. Because I think there's a lot of docs, and I got to admit, I'm kind of a let him go sort of guy, but there's a lot of docs that would have said, sorry, you can't fight.
Yeah.
And when he came off of the second round, BJ, I'm not sure BJ hit him too much to make it start bleeding again, but it just started going, and it just looked like it was dividing his face. I think you saw two fighters that really stepped up their game for this title.
Yeah.
You know, because I agree with you. Stevenson's rep preceded him. You know, a very, you know, he's fought so many times. You know, he's got a ton of experience for a guy his age. And yet, you know, he's got these quasi-questionable performances. And BJ Penn, who you really can't call him the prodigy anymore. Right. You know what I mean? I mean, he has a different nickname.
Yeah.
And they both stepped it up quite a bit. I think they are one and two. The analogy that came to me was the whole Silva Anderson analogy.
Right.
You know, BJ Penn in the role of Anderson Silva and Stevenson in the role of Rich Franklin.
Right.
And like I said, I'm not sure where Shirk, you know, minus Nandrolone is going to end up in all this. I'm anxious to see the fight, truthfully.
Oh, I am too. I was way
impressed with Stevenson. Way impressed with Stevenson.
And Penn, Penn as well. I mean, Penn, he looks as good now as he ever has at lightweight. I mean, the way he adjusted, you know. I mean, Joe Stevenson is a dominating fighter when he's, when he's fighting. He wants to be on top, and he's up there grounding and pounding guys, and.
Right.
You know, in that first round, it showed, you know, he showed a lot of good defense against Penn.
Yes, he did.
On the ground. You know, Penn would get him mounted and he would get out of it, and that was really impressive. But then in the second round, you saw BJ Penn adjust to that quickly, and he got what Joe Rogan called almost like a reverse guard, a guard from the top, which
right.
I don't think I've ever seen before, which was very cool, you know, and just the way that he can adjust like that on the fly to – you know, how Stevenson was pretty much nullifying his ground game was very impressive to me. And I think that's the kind of thing that spells trouble for Sean Sherk. Just because, I mean, let's be brutally honest here. Sean Sherk is not beating BJ Penn on the feet. I mean, not in a million years.
No. Well, Sherk was saying, I've got better boxing, I've got better this. And I thought to myself, you don't box anybody. I mean, your game is get the double leg, take him down, lay on him, throw some elbows, dominate position, and win a decision. I mean, that's been Sean Sherk's motif, you know, for his career. Unless he's turned into a finisher somewhere, I don't see him getting penned down. I just don't see him getting penned down. And I thought, in the second round, I thought Penn just sort of was waiting. You could just see that he was just waiting. He was more than willing to just wait for his opportunity to finish Joe some way. Because you know, Stevenson was bleeding anyway, coming out of the corner, he was already bleeding. And you could just see BJ, and I was impressed with his patience, because there's a lot of guys that I think would force it and, you know, push the opportunity and potentially get caught. And I was impressed with his maturity and his poise just to wait, because he knew Stevenson was going to come at him, and he waited, and he counterpunched, caught Joe a couple times, got on the ground, and that was it. So, when it comes to the end of the day, you know, I mean, I was kind of a BJ Penn, I wouldn't say a doubter, but I was always kind of, I don't know, I didn't believe the hype.
Well, yeah,
put it that way.
I think it took this fight, it took BJ Penn winning two fights in a row at lightweight without getting gassed before people were really going to start, or before everybody was really going to start hopping on the Penn train and believing that he was really, you know, going to be doing this, you know, because...
Okay, let me put this corollary in there then. Because, I mean, Pulver was overmatched.
For sure.
Pulver was overmatched. So, I mean, the last two fights, he's fought Pulver, who was overmatched, and I can't remember if that was a first or second round choke, and then now Stevenson, which I think if Stevenson wasn't gashed wide open from that elbow, I'm not sure this would end up in the second round, truthfully. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure BJ's tank, his gas tank, is beyond reproach yet. And I think the big question as far as Shirk Penn goes is, can Shirk get him on the ground and do what Shirk does best, which is push the pace, get him on the ground, make him work on the ground, and gas him out, because that's how Shirk will win. And that's really the only question to me.
That is the question, because if you look at their common opponents as far as Shirk and Penn, you've got George St. Pierre. Now St. Pierre beat them both. St. Pierre is actually the only person to ever stop Sean Shirk. And then he won the decision against BJ Penn. But if you look at those two fights, BJ Penn won that first round against George St. Pierre and then gassed. As far as Shirk goes, Shirk was dominated the whole time, could not get George St. Pierre down for the life of him. Now, he was outsized by St. Pierre and all that, but, I mean, looking at common opponents, you have
it'd
to get St. Pierre or BJ Penn the edge.
It's tough to argue for sure cooking at common opponents. There's no question.
Yeah.
However, you know, it's, you know, Shirk is still, you know, a monster on the ground.
Oh, absolutely.
He still pushes the pace like few in that division, if anybody.
All you have to do is look at the Hermes Franca fight to see, you know, how brutal Shirk is on the ground and how he can take a punch. Franca nailed him with the knees.
I don't see Penn knocking him out either. Truthfully,
yeah.
You know, I see this either going to, you know, I see either Penn catching him in a submission maybe, or Shirk getting, you know, frustrated that he can't get Penn down and, you know, making a mistake that Penn capitalizes on. Right now, like I said, for me, the Peter Totter question on that whole fight is who gets to exert their will, I guess, whose game plan gets put in play. I mean, unless Shirk has completely reinvented himself after the steroid scandal. But when you throw in the common opponents, you mentioned, you know, George St. Pierre. St. Pierre, it's been interesting to be a tough noob and watch St. Pierre develop over the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, from his first loss to Hughes to last month where I don't care how many times they fight from now on, Hughes is never beating St. Pierre.
No.
I mean, just it's never happening.
Yeah.
And I think everybody knows it. Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of common opponents, you know, I think you have to look at where they were at the time. In any case, this is Penn's fight to lose when he fights Shirk. I don't think there's any question about it. I think Penn has the advantage every way. If you can get Penn, you know, for the playing with money contest at less than minus 200, I would take him in a heartbeat. Because I think Penn will probably come out at a minus 250, minus 300, minus 350.
Yeah,
just like this fight, because I just have a hard time seeing where Shirk is going to, you know, even with Penn's gas tank being still technically a question, but boy, he looked awful good.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with you that that Penn is superior in all aspects. I think the only question, and this fight will really be the test of Mithya Penn's gas tank, because you know that Sean Shirk is not going to gas. If you ask me, I really think that Penn's best chance to stop Shirk is really on the feet. He might not knock him out cold, but I think he could hurt him. You know, if you look at that's something that people forget about BJ Penn a lot, is that he knocked out Dean Thomas in 99 or whenever it was, 01, I think. And Dean Thomas is a guy who's only been knocked out twice, once by Penn and once by Amar Sulalev, who fights at middleweight. You know, so, I mean, Penn has got some very heavy hands. He's kind of like a deceptively powerful striker, kind of like Nick Diaz, without the telegraphing of the strikes like Diaz has.
But, I mean, but then again, like I say, you're looking at a guy, over the course of time, I think things change a little bit.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely, you know, I'm not trying to compare BJ Penn of 01 to now.
No,
but,
I think we're you know, violently agreeing with each other. Yeah, Penn is clearly the favorite against Shirk. I don't think there's any question about it. And if his gas tank, you know, like I say, if Penn is truly committed to his cardio, I think he can hang with Shirk long enough that he can win this fight in any number of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Is that he could. He could pretty much win. He could win it in a number of ways. I think he could win a submission, a knockout, or a decision. Though Shirk would probably be very, very difficult to submit, just with how powerful he is. He'd probably have to soften him up in order to, you know, catch something, unless it was something like crazy flying submission or something like that. But for sure, I mean, I don't think there's any way.
I'm looking forward to seeing the fight. I was impressed with Penn, you know, calling out Shirk, you know, you're dead.
Yeah.
And then Shirk walking to the ring. I swear to God, I just flashed back to like 1996 WWE and The Rock coming or something. And I really did. I started marking out right there. I was like, look at him, Sean! Oh! And I thought there, you know. And Rogan is up there, you know, Mr. Cup, going, well, you know, Sean Shirk is here if you want to talk to him, BJ. You know, it's like, you know. And I really got the impression that BJ just kind of, you know, didn't think Shirk was in the building. And
yeah.
All of a sudden he was there. Then you see BJ kind of come back and say, oh, it's going to be a good fight, man. It's going to be a good fight. I'm thinking, you're going to kill him. And I guess, you know, that's the X factor. It's like, here's Sean Shirk that has an outstanding record.
Yeah.
Really, you know, I mean, really, if you look at his fights, he's been in there against pretty much everybody there is there, you know, there is to be against also.
Yeah.
And has done extremely well. And it's no slouch.
Yeah.
And yet there he is in England just getting booed out of the cage. And you can just see in his eyes, like, I'm going to train my bleep off, and I'm going to beat him. And it's like, to me, like I said, this fight can't happen soon enough.
Yeah, that's the X factor for Shirk, is that Shirk is going to be pissed. He's going to be thinking, you know, I'm not getting any respect.
Oh,
you know,
he's not.
And he feels like he's still a lightweight champion. Yeah.
Sean, he said as much. He said, that's my belt. You still have one fight to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said as much. He said, that's my belt. That's my belt.
Absolutely. So
that's my belt. And truthfully, he hasn't been beat. You know, he hasn't been beat. They stripped him of the title, but he hasn't been beat. So it's like, I think it's, you know, the early prediction for me is, you know, penned by a second round submission, but I'm looking forward to seeing the fight. I really am.
I reserve the right to change my mind. It's very tough to get a handle on this one. Definitely an intriguing fight to build up to. We'll have to see. I mean, the war of words on that one by itself is going to be fun to watch. So.
Yep. Assuming we do a podcast before then.
Yeah. We'll have to work on that. let's move backwards on the card a little bit. The fight before the Penn Stevenson fight co-main event, which I was surprised they treated it like they did, you know, with the big entrances and everything, was Gonzaga and Fabricio Werdum. Give me your thoughts on this one.
I am so disappointed in Gabriel Gonzaga. I really can't even put it into words how disappointed I am in his performance. I feel like George St. Pierre. I was not impressed by your performance. I picked Gonzaga. I picked him. I am a Gonzaga fan. I mean, I like his personality in the ring. I like the way he fights. He looks like a heavyweight.
Yeah.
And yet, it's like he doesn't train for three rounds. I mean, the first one I thought was clearly Gonzaga's round. I mean, he was crushing what we're doing with those leg kicks. Just brutal. I like it when you're watching it on TV, and the guy throws a leg kick, and you hear that slap.
Yeah.
Slap. You know, it's like, that's got to hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just got to hurt. And you could see we're doing just kind of, you know, I think a couple of the reviews, you know, the fight reviews I was watching, he tripped. You know, when Werdum went down, he tripped. No, he got knocked down by the kick. Twice, I can think of. The kick knocked him down. And yet, I was a little disappointed in that Werdum would not chase him to the ground. When he knocked Werdum down, Gonzaga wouldn't follow him to the ground. Because I thought he did okay on the ground. And when if you're matching two black belts against each other, top position is called top position for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's the better position. I mean, I assume. That's what I read anyway. And I was surprised he let him up as much, only because he wasn't pushing. The kicks were working, but he wasn't following it with anything else.
Yeah.
And then the second round starts, and it looked like he just had nothing left. You can even see it at the end of the first round, where Gonzaga just seemed like, well, I'm done.
Yeah.
And Werdum kind of, you know, came in with some strikes of his own and turned down his own game, and then the second round was all Werdum. And I was sitting at the TV going, dude, it's a 15-minute fight. I mean, you should be training for three rounds. You're supposed to be a top-five heavyweight. You're supposed to be a top-three heavyweight. You fought for the title. You know, I mean, clearly this is, I mean, when's the last time we had a non-title heavyweight fight that had relevance?
Right.
Right, Sean? I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah, you're
truthfully.
Right. You're right.
Here it was. I mean, one of these guys is on the fast road to the title. You know, they know this because Dana White keeps dropping these little subtle hints in there. He's not the most subtle person in the world anyway. And you throw, you have a great first round, but yet you look like you're beat when you go to the corner, and it's like you won the round.
Yeah.
So I was very disappointed in Gonzaga, truthfully. I mean, Werdum, I thought he was much more impressive than the Arlovski fight, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and he won. You know, he capitalized on his opportunity. I'm not sure if that's because Gonzaga blew it or because Werdum's that good. But, you know, the news I hear is Werdum's going to get the winner of Sylvia Bignog, and that's
yeah.
going to be for the interim title. So he's next in line. So good for him. I wasn't terribly impressed with Werdum, truthfully. But he won, so...
Yeah, I agree with you.
Good.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment. I was also pretty disappointed in Gonzaga. I mean, those leg kicks. They say it's like swinging a baseball bat. This was like swinging an oak tree at his legs. I mean, he was just killing Werdum with those leg kicks.
I'm not sure how he walked after that.
I know. I'm surprised he didn't break his legs, but. I mean, he was just thunderous leg kicks one after the other, and you're right. I mean, the cardio was just gone after the first round, and those knees. I mean, he let Werdum get him in the tie clinch with no fight,
no resistance.
I mean,
Werdum
was standing there for a couple seconds without even doing anything, just having his hands behind Gonzaga's neck. Getting ready to knee him in the head, you know, and Gonzaga's just standing there.
It was like in slow motion.
Well, I mean, when your best defense for knees is to squat down and put your hand on the ground so that he can't knee you in the face anymore, I mean, you know that's when your cardio is in trouble. And, you know, it was very disappointing for Gonzaga, especially after his, as Mike Goldberg would call it, his meteoric rise after... you know, beating Krokop and putting in a decent showing against Randy Couture, you know, it's pretty much a lackluster effort. I think Werdum was impressive, but at the same time, Gonzaga was just so disappointing that it kind of overshadowed Verdum's accomplishment, even though it's the second time he's beaten him, in my estimation, anyway.
I mean, that's factual. Well, I mean, and it was a meteoric rise. I mean, you know, he knocked out Krokop. And really, the Couture fight, I thought he looked good. I mean, he rocked Randy a couple times. He broke his arm, dude. If he didn't get the quote-unquote accidental headbutt that broke his nose, Gabriel Gonzaga is your heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
You know, because I firmly believe he would have won that fight.
I don't know if he would have won it, but he was... He was certainly winning it on the feet. If he was able to kick
yes.
his fist Couture, he definitely
yes.
would have knocked him out.
Yes.
But
and you come out and you throw a stinker like this out there. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I would think unless you're Randy Couture, your time in the spotlight is limited. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, and actually, the biggest heavyweight news I got out of the night was that Andrei Arlovsky's fighting at 82.
Yeah.
And he's fighting Jake O'Brien, back from the dead.
Yeah.
Jake O'Brien, which.
Yeah.
Which to me is either an incredible spotlight for Arlovski to come back with a highlight reel performance, or Jake O'Brien strikes again.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Arlovski becomes Heath Herring.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting fight. Not to digress too much, but that'll be an interesting fight because I want to see. I mean, really, this is as far as I've heard anyway. This is still the last fight on Arlovski's contract. So it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, if he's going to sign a new contract after this. I mean, obviously this fight is going to have something to do with it. So they probably, you know, I mean, it's an intriguing fight in the first place, but it was probably no accident that they put him in there against somebody that can make a fight extremely boring. So we'll have to see what happens there.
If you're that good, and he's the former champion, gosh darn it.
Oh, I agree. I agree with
then
you.
Then you should win. Then you should win
I
anyway.
Agree with you.
And then you should win however you want to win anyway. I mean, Jake O'Brien, outside of being Heath Herring, who right now, if he isn't the poster boy for overrated, I don't know who is. have we seen Jake O'Brien since then? I can't think of when we have.
No, he was injured, almost had to retire because of an injury. But this will be the first time we've seen him.
Yeah, throw another log on the fire. Arlovski should kill him.
you're right. Right.
I mean, they should be pumping this fight as Arlovski's return to the gold. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry, the heavyweight division right now still isn't very exciting. I mean, if you go through the five UFC divisions, you have a dominant champion and an and a photographic champion in BJ Penn. The welterweight division right now is George St. Pierre's, and I mean, we didn't do a 79 post show, but if that isn't one of the most dominant beatdowns you've ever seen,
oh.
I mean, yeah. You know, I don't care who's in the welterweight division right now. There is nobody that's beaten George St. Pierre,
no,
unless
nobody.
It's some sort of fluke. Matt, the only person in the world I wouldn't want to be right now is Matt Serra, because I have been in Montreal for, you know, Montreal Canadiens playoff games, and they. April in Montreal, George St. Pierre against Matt Serra, there's no way he's winning that fight. Not unless he brings like a sledgehammer and a team of SWAT agents with him into the cage. I mean, just ain't happening. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and after that, I mean, I'm a big John Fitch fan. I'm not sure Fitch is beating him. I like watching Caro. Caro's not beating him. I don't know anybody's beating him.
No.
You know, and then so you go to the middleweight division. Anderson Silva, apparently, you know, I think it's going to be a great fight against Henderson. Outside of Henderson, ain't nobody beating Silva.
Yeah, and by the way, you can pay me to miss that fight.
No, oh boy. I'll be watching that one for sure. You know, so I mean, if you go through divisions, really the most blah division is the heavyweight division, where you have a champion that's resigned, and then the guys behind him just aren't, I'm sorry, Tim Sylvia and Big Nog doesn't really get me going. I mean, it's probably a good fight. But, I don't know, it just doesn't really, it really doesn't light my fire, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of heavyweights to do.
Yeah. If your biggest marquee attraction is a guy who is 1-0 at this point, and Brock Lesnar, I mean, really, that is. It's their biggest marquee attraction in the heavyweight division.
Right, and that's okay.
But
at least they're starting somewhere.
Yeah, but this is a guy who's never fought in the UFC. And really,
right.
I mean, there should be a guy. If Lesnar beats one or two guys and looks unstoppable, there should be someone where we're saying, Brock Lesnar's got to fight this guy. But who is that in the heavyweight division right now?
Eddie Sanchez.
Besides Randy Couture.
Eddie Sanchez.
Yeah.
Randy Couture's not coming back.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, Sean. Honestly, I'm looking forward more to Lesnar-Mir than I am Sylvia Nogueira.
I am too.
I just am. I just am. Because Lesnar's a personality. He's a personality. I mean, the thing is, Lesnar has personality. Mir does too. He's got a great story.
Uh-huh.
Sylvia has neither. And Nogueira barely speaks English. Last time I listened to him. I mean, and that's not a strike per se, but I'm sorry. You know, it's an American corporation. You're trying to become mainstream in the USA. Speaking English well is helpful. He's a brilliant fighter. Has nothing to do with him as a fighter or as a person. But in terms of a communicator, in terms of getting the hype, and hey, it's all about hype because, you know, in terms of hype, Sean, in 2009, Shamrock versus Shamrock.
Oh, my God.
Watching that. Why?
Yeah.
Why are you watching that? Hype. You know, it's the story. It's how people still watch the WWE. It's hype.
Yeah.
You know, and right now... There's no question. Lesnar-Mir is a far better, interesting, hyped matchup.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as Nogueira goes, you know, it's like you said, not speaking English isn't necessarily a knock. And Nogueira is a great fighter.
It's not a plus.
But, yeah, but he doesn't have the resume of the UFC like Anderson Silva does, where he can get away with not speaking a lot of English and people still love him.
Right. Right.
You know.
Right,
so.
Exactly right. That's my point exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to the Gonzaga fight, bad on
Gonzaga.
Shame on you. You blew it. And it's like, and I think, I don't know, it's so hard to read these fighters sometimes. Because, I don't know, it's just, I don't train MMA. You know, I've said this before. But to me, if I'm a professional anything, it means that I have an idea of what the goal is, and I train or I prepare such that I can achieve that goal. So if I'm going into a fight in which I am the co-main event, I am prepared to go against a guy that goes to decision 60% of the time.
Yeah,
I am prepared to fight 3 5-minute rounds.
Yeah, and it's against the guy who is his only other loss besides Randy Couture.
I know, and anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't get up for that, what do you get up for? I don't know.
It's funny, Sean, because nobody picked Werdum, like in the prediction contest. out of all the entries we got, nobody picked Rudy. Not one. Seriously, that was the only fight that was unanimous across the board.
Wow.
Only fight. Yeah, the only fight. Which I was amazed. Because, I mean, Werdum's a good fighter. I mean, I think we're kind of overlooking him a little bit. He's a good fighter, but he's not an exciting fighter.
Yeah. Only that, I mean, he's a good fighter, but Gonzaga is just so good. I mean, there was no chink in his armor besides what Randy Couture did to him.
Right. And he gassed.
Yes.
He gassed in this fight. He was winning the fight.
Yeah.
If I was, all he had to do was keep circling, throwing kicks, wear down Werdum's legs, and then decide how you want to finish him. I mean, because you can see, Werdum was limping around the ring, cage, the second half of the first round. I mean, it was hard to watch. Anyway.
Well, let's move.
So Werdum's next.
What's that? Yeah, Werdum's next after
So basically, for those of you out there that are interested in this sort of thing, if Sylvia loses, you're going to have Nogueira as the heavyweight champion, who doesn't speak English, fighting Werdum, who doesn't speak English either, for the heavyweight championship of the UFC, trying to go mainstream. Good luck with that.
Yeah, not to mention Nogueira's already beaten him.
Not to mention.
Yeah.
Not to mention that.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Pride Fighting Championships, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no kidding at this point, huh?
You are no
well,
good
let's,
lead.
Yeah.
Let's move along.
Let's walk backwards again. What's that?
Let's move along.
Okay.
All right, so let's move. Let's move along.
Moving on. We've got one of my personal favorite fighters at the moment, Marcus Davis, taking on Jess Liadon. Davis just looks spectacular here. I mean, it didn't have long to do it, but... I think Jess Liadon learned a lesson that there's probably going to be a few more people learning, and that is that you don't stand with Marcus Davis.
You don't stand with Marcus Davis. No, you don't. Actually, I thought Liadon looked okay. I mean, he threw some good leg kicks. I thought he maintained the right distance. But I'll tell you, when Davis finally dialed into where the distance is, it was over. I mean, if you didn't see this, this is a highlight reel knockout. Rogan put it perfectly. Liadon was stiff before he hit the canvas, and he was. I mean, he was in full-blown muscle rigidity. And then to finish it, so Davis ends up in side mount and hits him a few more times. But the good news is Liadon probably didn't feel him because he was unconscious before he got hit. You do not stay on Marcus Davis. You really don't. And, you know, you have to wonder who's next for Marcus Davis.
Yeah, I gotta wonder if they're gonna move him into that kind of middle upper tier now. He's taken out a lot of guys. He's won what 11 fights in a row now or something.
Something like that.
Paul Taylor, which was really impressive with that Paul Taylor fight. And not to mention, I believe that the punch that he knocked out Liadon with was the first punch that he landed in the fight. If I'm not mistaken. No, maybe I am mistaken. I don't know. Anyway.
Who's close?
Regardless of whatever. You were right that Liadon kept him at a distance for a while, but to me it always seemed like he was just prolonging the inevitable. That's what it felt like to me anyway.
You know, you did. When you're watching the fight, the first thing I thought was Liadon looks very confident, and, he moved around the cage confidently, threw good kicks. And looked like he had the right game plan. But to me, the game plan would have been throw these leg kicks to set up a shoot, get this to the mat so I don't get, knocked the bleep out.
Yeah.
And he didn't get the second part in. And you could see it was Rogan, because I think Rogan on the broadcast was kind of calling it that Davis has got to slide and move in. Davis has got to move in. Then he started talking about the corner. When he kicks, move in.
Yeah.
And then there was a kick, and he kind of moved in and didn't catch him. And then there was another kick, and then he moved in, and he bombed him. And, I mean, it was just a brutal shot. You do not stand, and I tell you, you put it exactly right. You do not stand with Marcus Davis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I mean, and I say that, if he's fighting a guy like Carl Parisian or even Thiago Alves, I guess those two are fighting this at one of the fight nights here coming up, but. If he's fighting one of those guys, I'd like to see what he can do against them standing up. But still, he's got some nasty, nasty power.
When it comes down, in the welterweight division, in terms of, striking, there's not many that are going to stand with Marcus. I mean, you know, I mean, he could be, and very well might be, the very best striker, you know, at 170 right now.
Yeah, I'd have to look around at fighters to see if I agree with that, but I don't know.
He's right there. I mean, Sean, he's right there. I mean, he's got to be the
certainly
top two or three.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely that.
I mean, that was a big time. And that wasn't even a flush shot. I mean, the shot he knocked out Liotin with, it wasn't like it was right on the chin, you know, cranking his head back. That was kind of a upper jaw, neck, you know, off-center shot. And Liotin was out. I mean, he was just out.
Cold.
So, I mean, you know, Davis has got to be there. Is he? I think it's time to move him into the middle tier.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's crowded. There's no question about it.
Yeah,
he's
really interested to see what he can do against those guys.
I think it's time for him to stop fighting the gatekeepers. I think it's time for him to, if he's going to be their England guy, their UK guy, I think it's time to bring somebody over to fight him then.
Yeah, have him fight Diego Sanchez or Josh Koscheck or
exactly
you know,
right
one
there.
Of those guys.
Exactly
yeah.
right. Exactly.
I'm
right.
really am interested to see what happens there. Even Akihiro Gono or something like that. You know.
Yep.
In fact, Gono might be a good next fight for him if he recovers from injury in time.
Yeah. I mean, right now I think Sanchez is up for. Who did I see Sanchez up for? Ron Carnero.
Yeah, you're right.
I think next fight for Sanchez is Ron Carnero. And truthfully, that's a great fight.
Oh yeah,
that's a great fight. But you know,
I agree.
I think I'd be interested in seeing Davis against a guy that is a good striker, just to see how his game. You know, just to see, you know, how good is he? Right now he looks awful good, my friend. That was a brutal knockout.
Yeah, it looked very good. And, you know, this is going to be the telling fight for Liotin. I mean, he was a guy that, in my estimation, I thought they brought him in to lose to Dennis Siver at UFC 70, and he kind of spoiled their plans and then beat Anthony Torres. I don't know if he was supposed to beat him either. But then he beat Anthony Torres. And this was going to be the telling thing for Liotin because he's one of these fighters, you know, mid to late 30s or whatever it was. And, it was time, you know, he was 12-8 before the fight, so it was time to see what he was going to do against one of the upper-lower tier guys. So, I think, you know, like we said, I think Marcus Davis is ready to move to the upper middle of things. But, I don't know that we see Liotin again other than in a gatekeeper role, which is fine. I mean, he's
right.
a solid enough fighter.
He's a good fighter. I mean, like I say, if we're looking at Marcus Davis is moving to the upper middle top tier, there's no shame in losing to Marcus Davis.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
He came out to fight and he got knocked out. All right, well, it happens.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he's not the last guy that David's going to knock out.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Good. Well, let's move back again. We had, this was a good one. Jason Lambert and Wilson Gouveia. Give me your thoughts on this one.
This is a good fight. This might be, this might be I'm not sure it's the fight of the night, only because I thought Kelly Taylor was probably the fight of the night. But
yeah,
this is a good fight. This is a good, good fight. Jason Lambert is a good fighter. It's unfortunate that he is in the 205-pound division because there are just too many fighters above him that have a better name, more credibility, and more exposure. But Jason Lambert's a darn good fighter. And Wilson Gouveia, who is a very, very good fighter, I think is probably the future of the division, hung in there wonderfully against a guy that was implementing his game plan and won the fight.
Yeah.
If you didn't see the fight, I thought Lambert won the first. It ended in the second round. Lambert won the first round, I think, pretty convincingly.
Yeah.
Very aggressive. Pursuing Gouveia around the ring, landing shots, winning the round. And then in the second round, came out with the same game plan and got caught by just a vicious left hook. It was one of those Crow Cop style knockouts where as you're going down, your body contorts into all sorts of unnatural positions.
Yeah, because he was in the process of throwing a punch, so he was still making that window move. And then down he goes.
And I'll tell you, Wilson Gouveia was a big win. I think you're going to see Wilson Gouveia about to enter the deep end of the pool against you know, definitely, against the upper 205 pounders of the world.
Definitely.
I
mean,
not
I had
names, but go ahead.
I was going to say, not
to name too many names, but, you know, they're talking about bringing Tito Ortiz back, and you got Shogun Rua in this division, and Silva's still around, and, you know, Jardine, and, you know, there's a lot of 205, there's a lot of big sharks in this pool, and I think
Definitely. The
next fight for Gouveia is going to be against one of the bigger sharks.
Yeah, as it should be. And, I had Lambert all the way in this fight. I thought Lambert was going to win, but, man, I got to tell you, I was stunned when he knocked out
Sean, for the first round, this ended at 37 seconds in the second round. For the first 5 minutes and 35 seconds, you were right. Lambert was winning the fight.
Yeah.
And there's no question about it. I mean, Lambert was
winning
the fight.
Yeah, but they weren't trying too much to get his nickname over, were they?
No.
Goldberg.
Goldberg is the biggest... Goldberg is the biggest useless lump on a pay-per-view broadcast I've ever seen. I swear to God, I think they ought to have a little contest where they just bring in like an MMA columnist from the internet to sit aside, you know, sit next to Rogan and do a UFC broadcast, and it would be better than Goldberg. I mean, what a lump he is. I mean, I'm trying to think what his hook is, dude. What is his hook?
Yeah.
He's got no hook. He's ugly.
And here we go.
Everybody, that's it. And George Rivera is back. No, he's not back. You know, he won the fight. He drives me nuts. I mean, maybe that's his hook, is that he frustrates people that follow the sport. He's awful. I mean, I enjoy Rogan's commentary. I really do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I know there's some people that don't. But I do, and I think that most people, Rogan at least, sounds informed. And usually, he's pretty on target. Goldberg, he's not even a good, I don't know what he's there for. I mean...
Yeah.
Anyway, getting back to the fight. Anyway,
yeah,
Lambert didn't lose anything by getting knocked out.
No,
I don't think. I think Lambert's got a future in the UFC. He brings the pace. Is he ever going to be champion? Probably not. Is he ever going to be a top guy? Probably not. But he'll have a job for a time, you know, some time to come, just because he brings it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're right in the fact that he doesn't lose anything because he got knocked out being aggressive. I mean, he never ever backed down for a second in this fight, and and you know, as many times
Sean,
as they said it in the first round.
He was winning the fight, Sean.
as they told us about 400 times in the first round, he was punishing Gouveia a lot.
He was.
You know,
he was.
I mean,
he was
dropping bombs on him. So Lambert will be fine. He'll get another fight, but Gouveia. I think you're right about Gouveia. I think he moves in with the Sharks right now. I mean, that's the kind
Let's
of fight this was
now.
To see who's going to take that next step. So, and Gouveia. I mean, he was. You know, we always knew that he had solid jiu-jitsu, and now we see that he can at least got flash knockout power.
That was a big shot. Oh well, flash knockout or no, that was a big shot, and it was in the right
that
spot.
Was a big
I mean,
shot.
Like in the last fight, we were talking about the last fight where Davis really didn't. Get a flush shot on Leonin. That was a flush shot, but it was a
perfect
big shot.
Yeah.
It was whiz bang. And so it's the sort of thing that if you're the next guy for Gouveia, you gotta pay attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was oddly enough, it was kind of reminiscent of the shot that Lambert landed on Babalu.
Yes it is. And also, you know, Gouveia can take a punch.
Oh yeah.
He took many. He took many. I mean, Lambert hit him with a punished him, as they kept saying. You know, he took a few. So, very impressive performance from Gouveia to hang in there and win that fight, truly. But I can't wait to see who they match him up against next, truthfully. Because, I mean, he's got a future. He does have a future. I mean, you know, could he be a champ someday? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, you never know.
You know, maybe. You never know. Maybe.
Oh. Good. Well,
great fight, though.
So,
we're four fights through our review here. All of them good fights.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we were talking about the card earlier. Ba-bang.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's look at, we got Kendall Grove and Jorge Rivera in what was billed as afterwards, anyway. What was billed as Jorge Rivera's coming back party. What do you got on this one?
George Rivera is back! Freaking rawr. Anyway. I think it's time for Kendall Grove to go back to the drawing board and figure out what he's going to do with his career as a professional MMA fighter. Because he got overwhelmed by a guy that is far older than him in a fight that there was really no reason for Grove to lose. I mean, this should have been Grove by submission, by strikes, or an outright submission somewhere in the late first or mid second round. I mean, that's the way this fight was supposed to play out. And Rivera crashed the party by following a very simple game plan. Crowd Grove, throw punches, put the pressure on him. And if 35-year-old Jorge El Conquistador Rivera can do this, then I'll tell you right now, Grove ain't beating anybody. Because that is probably one of the most simple game plans to follow for somebody who isn't fearless, you know, for
absolutely
somebody who is fearless and has decent skills. So Grove has to figure out what he's going to do with his career. Because right now, he ain't beating anybody.
Yeah, because really, I mean, if you have no other game plan as a guy who is, however tall he is, 6'4", 6'5", in the middleweight division.
Yeah. He's 6'6". He's 6'6", 185.
Yeah, your game plan is keep your distance, if nothing else.
Right.
And he's gotten crowded in his last two fights. And, you know, obviously,
and he loses.
Doesn't have the best chin in the world because he's gotten knocked silly, you know, against Cote and Rivera now.
Right.
So, you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
he needs to go back and evaluate, maybe go with another team, something.
Yeah, something. You're 6'6". That means you have to utilize, what, jabs and leg kicks to keep your opponent away until you want to close the distance
exactly
and implement your ground game. You know, and right now...
Yeah. There was no point in that fight. There was no point in that fight where Grove was at a distance where he could do anything.
Mm-hmm. Rivera came in immediately, throwing punches, and Grove backed up against the cage, and one thing led to another, and it was over.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, to watch it, I remember, you know, because I picked Grove, of course,
yep,
and watching it, you know, I was just, I thought to myself, what a goofy pick, because apparently
absolutely
the word has gotten out about Grove.
Absolutely.
You know, and right
he's
not beating anybody. Charm.
Yeah.
Grove's not going to beat anybody at 185. He's not going to beat anybody at 185 until he develops a jab or something to keep people off him so he can use his size. Because ultimately where Grove is very good is on the ground where he uses his freakishly long limbs to tap you out.
Yeah.
And right now, the problem is getting inside and getting on that position if you're 6'6 is difficult. And so he's got to figure that out. Now, he's young enough where he can. But he's got to figure that out soon, because right now, because 185 is not a real deep division.
No,
he's got to figure that out soon.
Yeah, I mean the thing is with Grove. I mean, and you're right, because watching that fight, the first 10-15 seconds when he had Grove up against the fence and Grove was turtling up, I was like, he's going to lose. You could tell very quickly that he was going to get knocked out.
Right, he's going to lose.
Because Rivera, he kept the pressure on, and Grove, and he wouldn't do anything to get off of him. And
I mean,
he knows Grove can get knocked out. So, yeah, he was done.
Right. It only lasted like a minute and a half anyway. I mean, we're not talking like a two-round, three-round fight here. It was a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and like I say, Rivera, you know, take it for what it is, but the dude's 35 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he is in the middle tier of the division, if you could say such a thing. You know, you shouldn't be losing to this guy. I mean, no, and this is not to be detrimental. This is not to be a slam on Rivera. But, you know, if you're Kendall Grove and you are seriously considered to be like one of the next things, you can't lose this fight.
Yeah.
Not when you have advantages, and you're 6'6". All right. Well, you have to use that to your advantage. You know, and again, there were a couple of disappointing performances on this card, and you know, Gonzaga was probably one, and Grove was like 1A.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And
Grove's at the point now. Yeah, Grove's at the point now where if he loses another fight like that, he could be the first guy to win the Ultimate Fighter and be out of the UFC.
Yeah, go fight in Cage Rage, you know.
Yeah.
King of the Cage. Next case. You know, because there's other guys that will bring it and not get their, you know, again, especially I believe he's still at Team Punishment, you know, where, you know, the hallmark of the founder is getting the guy on the ground and elbowing him to death.
Yeah.
All right. Then if you're going to go in with that game plan, then you should be shooting from, like, second one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And he like, Rivera was happy to close the distance. So wrap your, you know, 76-inch, you know, wingspan around him and take his ass down.
Yeah.
You know, but not, you know, I mean, take the shot, but go down and, you know. just very, very odd to me. Again, here's me, a layperson. I'm a fan, okay? And I watch these quote-unquote professionals fight. And it's like, you know who your opponent is. It wasn't like Rivera was a late substitution. And I go back to the Gonzaga fight. You know, you were slated to fight War Doom. You should have a game plan going into the fight, and you train to the game plan, so you'll be successful. Well, you know, getting overwhelmed, and really, when you're Kendall Grove, you know what the other guy's going to do. He's going to try to get inside and knock you out,
yeah,
because he got knocked out by Patrick Cote, which
yeah.
is what it is. All right, so you know what he's going to try to do. So you should game plan to nullify that game plan.
Yep.
And he didn't, and so he looks like an idiot. To me, you know, the whole cloak and dagger routine, you should know better.
Yep.
Or somebody should be advising you better, one or the other. You shouldn't be getting knocked out 90 seconds into the fight.
See, first thing I thought of after that fight was that, you know, he's with Team Punishment. Tito Ortiz is on The Apprentice. Who's been coaching him? Not that they don't have great coaches at Team Punishment. I don't know who's their coach besides Tito. Who's working with him. But, you know, does he need to get to a place where, you know, he can focus more on, I don't know, game planning? I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
You should go train at Extreme Couture.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It was disappointing. And you have to wonder, because that was, I mean, the Gonzaga, you know, Fabricio Werdum is a name fighter. I mean, he's been around. He's won some big fights. He's been in against the big names. And, you know, and he wins against Gonzaga, okay, you can see that. Rivera, you can't say that against Grove, because that was a fight for Grove to win. I mean, that was set up for Grove to win that fight, and he didn't.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Going to the next fight, that was another fight for a guy to set up. The next fight, somebody set up to win, and he did.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Hardonk Robinson, that was a fight for Anthony Hardonk to find his groove.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not sure if he did, but he won.
Yeah.
Right? But it's the same idea.
Yeah,
he
certainly needed, he's with, I think what they said he was with American Top Team, is that right? No?
He's with American Top Team now, which is,
which is good for him because
for Anthony Hardonk.
Yeah.
Because now he becomes relevant. Now Hardonk becomes relevant. Because he's like with a real team. He's with a real team, and he's a real fighter.
Yeah.
And because American Top Team is one of those camps that will train you such that all of a sudden your weaknesses won't be as weak.
Yeah, which is good for him because he got exposed against Justin McCulley, especially because that fight was horrendous.
It was awful. I mean, it was awful. It was brutal. I mean, Justin, what's his nickname? The mean one or something like that. The mean one.
Yeah. The insane one.
You know, who also is a Team Punishment guy, who implemented his game plan, mind you, and won the fight.
Yeah.
You know, the insane one. I'm sorry, the insane one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, so here's Anthony Hardonk. Well, he's a banger. He's not a ground guy. He's a banger. So, you know, the UFC's going to put him in against Colin Robinson, who is a street brawler. You know, so the idea is Hardonk's going to win.
Yeah.
And Hardonk goes out, and he did. You know, and if you saw this one, it was the very last fight of the evening on the pay-per-view card, which I was amazed to see they put this fight on about 15 minutes to go in the pay-per-view time.
There's actually one more after that, but that's okay.
Who fought after Hardonk Robinson?
Sakara Lee.
Oh, that's right, Sakara Lee. You're right. I'm sorry. That's right. You're right. You're right.
Fine. Go ahead.
You're right. So Hardonk just throws some vicious leg kicks at Robinson, who has no idea they're coming, apparently. hits Robinson with a couple, not the stiffest shots in the world, but lands a couple left hands. Robinson goes down, cannot get back up, and it was odd to watch Mario Yamasaki kind of do the, I'm going to stop this kind of jig, back and forth, you know, because it was interesting to watch. Robinson was down. And Yamasaki wasn't over him, and Hardonk backed off. And when Robinson started to get up, Yamasaki kind of backed off a little bit. And then Robinson started to fall, and you could see both Yamasaki and Hardonk charging at Robinson.
Yeah.
Yamasaki to save him, and Hardonk to finish him off. And, that to me was the most dramatic part of the fight.
Yeah.
Clearly, Robinson had no business being in there with Hardonk. I mean, just no business being in there with a guy like that. And it was oddly enough one of the few fights that went according to plan, based on most of the reviews I read, that Harlong's technical striking would win the day, and sure enough it did.
Yeah. And, this was another leg kick clinic. I mean, Hardonk, and he threw these leg kicks from not very far away. He was, like, right up close with Robinson and was just peppering him. Those were some big, big leg kicks.
Right. He was really turning his hip into it to kind of, because of the close distance. He was really turning his hip and his pelvis to really swing the leg. And
he was swinging him down. I mean, just downward leg kicks, which was really cool.
Pretty much knocked him down, and he couldn't get up because of it, I'm sure. I mean, they were just brutal leg kicks. I mean, last night we saw some just nasty, nasty leg kicks.
Yeah.
I
mean, it looked like Hardonk's knee was a swivel or something, the way he was angling those kicks. It was really cool.
Excellent analogy. Just excellent analogy. So where does Hardonk go? I don't know.
He's still gonna need a win against the guy he's gonna need a win where he can hold his own on the ground before he's, brought back onto into the heavyweight scene.
Right, but there's your heavyweight division though. Your heavyweight division is so jelly right now.
That's
why I almost prefer a dominant champion, just so you can stratify guys a little bit. The heavyweight division right now is a mess. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah, so we had Hardonk, and then after that fight, or rather before that fight on the actual card, or on the pay-per-view card, was Paul Taylor and Paul Kelly, which was the fight of the night, in my estimation, the fight of the night.
I agree.
What do you have on this
one? What a fantastic fight. The first round, the first 3 minutes of the first round was just insane. And really, they carried the pace pretty well through the entire 15 minutes. Good on Paul Kelly for really upsetting Paul Taylor, who was a prohibitive favorite going into the fight. And he really came to fight. It's funny. Taylor's nickname, I believe, is Relentless. And Kelly just took it to him the entire fight. Took it to him the entire fight.
Yeah.
And it was one of those fights that, I'm sure most of us, including me, I remember Paul Taylor from his previous fight against Davis. But, you haven't seen these guys fight. You don't have a whole lot of background on them. There's not a lot of backstory. And yet, very entertaining fight. Two guys go out, throwing punches, throwing bombs, rolling on the ground, going. Great fight to see on the pay-per-view card. Truthfully, most people went on the line with Taylor. There were a couple people that ventured out on a limb with Kelly, and they were rewarded. But I think this was the fight of the night just for the pace and the energy. And both guys, to me, I'd love to see them fight again against different opponents anytime the UFC goes back to England. Absolutely.
Yeah, to me, I'm surprised this fight was on the undercard because in Paul Taylor's other two fights in the UFC was Marcus Davis and Edilberto de Oliveira, or Crocota, whatever you want to call him, that weird-looking dude.
Yep.
at the UFC 70. Both of his other two fights were very impressive. He lost the Davis fight, but won the Oliveira fight. But he looked really good in both of them. So, I mean, this is a guy, to me, who really shouldn't be on the undercard. I'm glad he showed up on the main card. It was a really good fight.
It was a great fight. I agree with you, but the problem is, when they set the card up, they're only looking at five fights to put on the main card. So, I mean, Grove is their poster boy, and he lost.
Yeah.
Another guy that they're probably pimping a little bit. Davis, there was really nowhere to put Taylor on the main card.
You're right.
Nine fights they had.
You're right, because Davis shouldn't be on the other card.
Davis shouldn't be on the other card. Especially not the knockout he threw out, So, I mean, you won't see Davis on the undercard anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah.
Grove, you will. geez, I'd almost argue Gonzaga you would too. Anyway, but no, I mean, it was a great fight. That's what you pay to see, though.
Yeah,
absolutely. If you're laying out your 40 clams, you want to see that fight because it was three rounds of just good action. So again, from the bank for my buck, I would be happy to watch those guys fight again anyone in the 170 just to see him fight again because they bring it.
Yeah.
It's not dull.
Absolutely. So, yeah, really good fight there. I mean, not a whole lot to say about it, really. I mean, Kelly, it was another one where Kelly pretty much instituted his game plan. They came out in that first round, the first, 15 seconds or so, it looked like Don Fry and Akiyama, just going crazy on each other. And, neither guy budging, but really good stuff. And then, I should say a little more technical than that, but anyway.
Well, it was a little more. It was yes, that's true. But Kelly was first, and he was fast.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
He obeyed both rules. Be first, be fast. And he was. And
Taylor,
I had no issue with the decision.
Yeah, if there was a knock on Taylor in this one, it was that he may have gotten exposed a little bit on the ground. So it'll be interesting to see what he does about that, because this is the kind of fight that if you lose it, I mean, he was clearly, to me, the better striker, but just couldn't stay on his feet because he just kept getting taken down. So this is the kind of fight for a fighter where you say, okay, now I have something to work on. So
that was a UFC, style win. I mean, it was banging, 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 and you could see about probably midway through the fight, Kelly realized, I could win this fight if I take him down.
Yep.
And he did. And he did, and he won the fight.
Yep.
So good on Paul Kelly. I mean, it's good to see guys, like you said, with you referencing DJ Penn, adjusting their game plan a little bit, adjusting their thoughts during the fight. No question, Paul Kelly did it in this fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
strong work.
So, moving down again, we had on another undercard bout that was actually the last fight they showed on the pay-per-view after Hardonk and Robinson was Sakara and Lee, or Alessio Sakara and James
fight.
Lee. Yeah, very weird fight.
Weird fight.
Give me your thoughts on this one.
I thought Lee was a solid bet to win this fight, even though he was a bit of a dog going into the actual fight itself. It was a hard fight to watch because the ending was so... It wasn't clear to me. I mean, because at the end of it, Lee was kind of like sitting in a squatting position looking at his trainers, and I didn't quite understand. I didn't quite understand. It was hard to visualize, especially after a night where, everybody's getting knocked out, why the fight's being stopped. I mean, Sakara was in a dominant position, and he looked great, probably the best I've seen him in at least 3 or 4 fights I can think of. It's just a weird fight to watch. On the upside, I've always been kind of a fan of Sakara. He's got solid all-around skills. I was a little disappointed when he lost to Dean Lister, but this is a good win for Sakara. I think it'll kind of bump him up a little bit and keep him around. Lee really doesn't lose too much here, especially if he's claiming a back injury. These things happen. But again, I mean, in a general sense, I couldn't believe really the UFC throwing us 8 fights on the card.
Yeah.
For the pay-per-view buy, which out of all the cards I've bought, I can't remember getting 7, much less 8. So hopefully this will be a trend that continues. I'm not sure if it's because there are a lot of early stoppages or not, but in the last half hour of the show, they threw in the Hardonk fight and the Sakara fight, and I give them a lot of props for that.
Yeah, definitely. And this Sakara fight, and now that I'm thinking about it, I think we're thinking about Sakara, who's on American Top Team now. I don't know if that's I think it was Sakara instead of Hardonk that joined Top Team.
Maybe
because I've got the video up now and I see the Top Team banner behind him. So yeah, it was Sakara that joined American Top Team, needs to work on his ground game because as you mentioned, that loss to Dean Lister, which. By the way, that triangle that Lister threw on him was beautiful. But anyway,
one of the best submissions of the entire year.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. But Sakara here looked really good defending the takedown, which was something that had plagued him before. He just wasn't that good on the ground, but he was able to get back up after Lee got him down, which I think was what hurt Lee in the first place. With the back problem,
right.
And then finished him off with those hammer fists.
Yep.
But Sakara is a guy who we've seen before, and he's got some very heavy hands. He used to be a pro boxer and all that. So, and he said after the fight that he was going to move down to middleweight, so that could be intriguing. You know, maybe we see him fight Drew McFedries again at 185. You know, they fought at 205 and McFedries knocked him out. What's that?
Speaking of Drew McFedries, he'll be facing Patrick Cote in 3 days.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
Which is a fascinating fight, not to get too far out of ourselves, but man, I'm looking forward to see. I am really looking forward to that fight. More so than Sweaty Berkman, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, I agree with you. I definitely agree. I think he's got a lot of upside, and
definitely.
He needs a couple more wins though. But I mean, I still remember the Lister victory over Sakara, and that was just one of the most fluid, pleasant to watch submissions I think I've ever seen. I mean, it was perfect. It was just like it was textbook. I mean, this is how you do it. And he's tap 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 tap, and when he's done, Dean told him this is how you do it.
It was like it was truly, you know, they call it putting on a clinic. That was truly a clinic. It was like if you were showing someone how to do a triangle, that's what you would show them. But all that aside, you know, I think Sakara has nowhere to go but up with his new affiliation. You know, if he can hold his own on the ground, he's going to be a handful. So it'll be nice to see what happens there. So all in all, you know, real thumbs up card for me. I'd say, you know, it's definitely worth the money, and I think you agree with me as you said before.
Truthfully, you know, the last two cards have been good enough. I mean, you know, this card was fantastic just because we got to see nearly all the fights. And, I mean, really there was nothing in the UFC 80 card that you missed. I mean, you had knockouts. You had submissions. You had good matchups. You had blood. You had banging. I mean, seriously, it was all there.
Yeah, it was definitely a good card in probably the opposite sense of UFC 79 where you had... You know, I think they only showed five fights on that card. It was either five or six. But the first ones all kind of acted as filler to the Liddell Silva fight, which was instant classic, and the St. Pierre Matthews fight, which was kind of a passing of the torch, dominant victory over the old name.
Yep, I agree.
Whereas this one was just eight, you know, entertaining fights.
It was good to watch. I mean, they were good fights. They were good to watch. Like I say, for a first card of 2008, I really hope that they do end up showing, you know, more of the card than they usually do. I hope it's a trend that continues.
Yeah, definitely. Good. Well, then let's move on real quick before we sign off. Let's do a quick preview of this Wednesday's fight night. I'm just going to run through the undercard real quick. Not a whole lot on the undercard, but we've got Joe Varez versus Corey Hill. Corey Hill, of course, being the tall lightweight. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a fun fight to watch. I mean, Corey Hill is entertaining. I mean, win or lose, I mean, he's another one of these, you know, extravagantly tall freaks that, you know, sits in the division. Right now he's about a 2.5-1 favorite to win the fight. I tell you, that's good odds. That's good odds on Varus, as far as I'm concerned. This is a tough one to pick. This is a tough one to pick because I'm not. You know, Hill has the extravagantly long record of 1-0.
Right.
I think it'd be a fun fight. It'd be a fun fight to watch. Considering that I am the number one contender for the prediction championship, I'm not sure I'm going to really put my picks up there yet. Per se, I will publish them in a day or so, but I am very disappointed. For those of you that are listening in Torch Nation, you know, we run the contests, and we invite you all to participate. It doesn't cost anything. It's free. It's basically just costing your time. And I put out the number one contender picks a few days before the event, and none of you listened to me. Now, I understand that my UFC 79 picks were abhorrent, but still, I saw the light, but none of you listened to me. So I expect you all to listen, or at least read, and get it in a day or two when I publish my next article. So I'm not going out there for the Hill-Varus fight just yet. I'm I am holding my I guess I'm looking for the phrase, holding my own counsel.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this one. We should find out a little bit more about Joe Varez than we did in his UFC debut, where he was knocked out in 9 seconds by Gray Maynard.
This will last at least 9 seconds. I am confident that
win or lose.
I don't think Varys is a bad pick. I mean, I'm not sold on Hill. I'm not sold on Hill, and I'm not sure if that's just because I'm discouraged because of Groves' lousy performance. But you know, big tall guys there's ways to get. Ways to get inside their vulnerabilities.
Yeah. Okay, next we got, speaking of Gray Maynard taking on Dennis Cyborg.
Gray the Bully.
Yeah.
This should be a fun fight to watch, too. Mm-hmm. Another tough one to pick.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe this will be Cyborg's lightweight debut.
It might be. Boy, tough one to pick, Sean.
Yeah, these really bottom
of the
cards.
I mean, really should be a decent ground, close in, a lot of grappling sort of battle.
Yeah.
Tough one to pick. It should be entertaining if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think you see bombs away, but it's going to be I think it's going to be more of your technical, positional sort of fight. Again, I'm not sure which way I'm going on this one yet either.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, these bottom-of-the-card guys, at least for now, you know, the guys that they're building up slowly, it's tough to pick them because, you know, Gray Maynard we've only seen a couple of times, and Dennis Cyborg we've only seen a couple of times. So, you know, to me, the Varys Hill one is pick them, you know. I had no idea about that,
right.
where to go.
Right.
But, yeah. Anyway, moving on, we have Matt Wyman taking on Justin Buchholz.
I think this is Wyman's fight to win. I think this is a bit of a showcase fight, truthfully. Having said that, the thing about the fight nights is you tend to see fighters that that really don't have the long record that the pay-per-view fighters have.
Yeah.
And having said that, anytime you get into trying to sort out what's going to happen or who the favorite is, you're really drawing from a shallow pool of experience. So for, you know, in this particular instance, you know, the records are almost identical.
Yeah.
If you look at it. And you really got to do a little research into finding, you know, what these guys have looked like previously. Still, though, yeah, I would lean towards Wyman somewhere in the second round.
Yeah, the only time we've seen Buchholz was at an Elite XC event. I don't even think he was on the main card, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think he was.
Yeah, I don't think he was either. But he fought an Icon a few times. You know, I've never actually seen him fight if he wasn't on that main card. And if he was, I don't remember him. So, you know, it's another one that's tough to pick. You know, you know Matt Wyman from a few fights. He's a tough guy.
Yep.
But these guys that you don't know anything about, a lot of times, I mean, they're the ones that come out of nowhere. I mean, you don't have to say it anymore. It happens so often.
That's true. Well, but that's a good point. That you know, that's why God made YouTube, and trying to dig them up is difficult.
Yeah.
Tough fight to call. I mean, you know, Wyman, I think, has fought the better competition overall, but...
Yeah, for sure.
You never know. You never know.
But these Alaska and Hawaii guys, you never know. He's fought in the fought in the Alaska Fighting Championship, and he fought in Rumble on the Rock and Icon. So he's been away from the mainland a little bit. So we'll see what happens there. Moving on, we've got Cole Miller and Jeremy Stephens. Stephens making his return to the Octagon after losing to Dean Thomas. Took a little sabbatical from the UFC.
I got to ask you, are you sold on Cole Miller after watching him in you know, The Ultimate Fighter?
No.
I mean, I was just never sold on Cole Miller as a legitimate, as a you know, legitimate lower tier, you know, fighter in the UFC.
You know, I was impressed with his decision over Leonard Garcia. I was impressed there. But, you know, Garcia's a guy, again, who's going to be fighting at 145. He's going to move to the WC and fight at 145.
Right.
So, you know.
I think I'm going with Stevens in this fight when I throw up my soon-to-be championship-winning picks.
I have never been sold on Miller. Yeah, I'm actually also going with Stevens. Stevens actually fought at UFC 76 where he fought Diego Saraiva. But I've been really impressed with Stevens actually from what I've seen of him. So
right,
I'm interested to see this fight for that reason. Next up, we've got Kurt Pellegrino taking on Alberto Crane.
Oh, this should be fun.
Yeah.
Whenever you see Kurt Pellegrino in the cage, you should try to watch the fight. Phenomenally entertaining fighter. Last time we saw Alberto Crane, I think he was getting elbowed from behind, you know, while having the back of Roger Huerta. I'm not sure there are many guys that can really match Pellegrino's pace, and I don't think Alberto Crane's one of them. If he couldn't hang with Roger Huerta, I don't think he can hang with Kurt Pellegrino. Pellegrino's one of those undiscovered talents, I think, still in the division.
He got beat by that by Joe Stevenson, but you know Joe Stevenson again is a
going back to about 80 minutes ago. To me, Joe Stevenson is like the next champ. I mean,
exactly. That's what we're next.
Joe Stevenson, Alberto Crane. You're talking three or four levels of difference there. I mean, at least I think Pellegrino takes this fight easily.
Yeah, I agree. I think at best, it'll probably be a frenetic submission attempt machine for round one. And then after that, I think Pellegrino wins on gas. Whether he stops him or not is the question, probably. I'm interested to see. This will definitely test. What's that?
I don't think this one's going three rounds.
Yeah, it'll test Pellegrino's submissions for sure. I mean, he's got great submissions. We know that, but Crane has got really good submissions as well. So should be interesting. Moving on to the main card, we've got Nate Diaz taking on Alvin Robinson.
You know, I'll be honest with you, Sean. I'm not sure what to make of this fight. You know, I think Robinson's an awful good fighter at this weight class, and I'm not sold on Diaz being as good as he thinks he is. I think this is going to be pretty tight, truthfully. I know Diaz has been installed as the favorite, you know, by about a 2-1 margin at least.
Wow.
But, I'm not sure which way to go on this one at all yet. You know, watching Diaz fight on The Ultimate Fighter, he really seemed to be a guy that just, you know, kind of a very patient fighter, and that's impressive, but I'm not sure it's always a winning strategy. And I like Robinson's opportunity here.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
I haven't made my decision yet, but I'm really leaning towards Robinson.
Yeah, I at least like the odds of Robinson.
It's a good matchup. I mean, it should be a good fight to watch.
Yeah, definitely interesting.
There's no question.
You know, you've got Diaz, who you know, just beat Junior Sun Tzu,
right,
September. And then you've got Robinson, who took out George Grizel, and Grizel was never even in that fight. I mean, Robinson...
No, he wasn't.
Grizel, in his hometown, you know, made him look bad.
See, that's what I wonder, Sean. I mean, if you recall that fight, it was Robertson in, you know, Grizel's guard, half guard, for three rounds, just delivering punishment. And
yeah,
Diaz is one of those guys that will let you sit in his guard.
Yeah.
You know, Diaz will fight off his back. And I'm just wondering, I just think this is a bad matchup for Diaz. I just think it is. You know, because Robertson will be happy to take you down, you know, push on your back, and, you know, ground and pound away. It's an odd fight to see on the card.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't argue with you there that it could be a bad matchup for Nate Diaz. I don't know enough about Robinson to say for sure what, you know, but I think he's definitely a live dog. Let's look at Patrick Cote and Drew McFedries. What do you got there?
I'm going to flip a quarter. The only thing I'm going to say in confidence is someone's getting knocked out. I feel confident this isn't going to the ground for long.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see both guys kind of trying to knock the other one out. Cote impressed me against Grove. McFedries has been good in his last two fights. I got to admit, it's a tough call. Tough call. I'm going to go with Cote. I'm going to go with Cote only because I think he gained a lot of confidence from Grove and knocking out Grove. And, you know, it wasn't long ago that Cote was known as a, maybe not an A fighter, but certainly a B-plus fighter. And I'm wondering if he's rediscovering his old ways. So I'm going to lean towards Cote in this fight. But still, I think this should be a dandy, especially on pre-TV, this should be a dandy next to main event.
Yeah, for sure. I see your logic, and I'm going to go the other direction. I think McFedries can take a punch well enough to where he's going to be able to weather whatever Cote can throw at him and knock him out.
It could be.
You know, McFedries stood with Alessio Sakara at 205, so I think anything that Cote's got, I think he can take. You know, I could be wrong, but we'll see.
No, you could be right. You could be right, but it would be better if you put your picks in for the prediction championship on MMAtorch.com. Plug, plug, plug.
As I will.
As you
although my picks for 80 were horrible, horrible, horrible picks, but we won't go into
that.
That's
all right. You would have been behind the number one contender anyway. 1-6-3.
Very true.
Gosh darn it.
Moving on, we've got another guy that the UFC is looking to promote, or so it would seem, Thiago Tavares, looking to beat up Michihiro Omegawa. What's your preliminary thoughts here?
My preliminary thoughts are what do they call it in wrestling? A squash? Match?
Mm-hmm.
Tavares seems to be head and shoulders the better fighter here. Going through the records, going through who they fought. Tavares is in at about a 7-1 favorite.
That's about accurate.
What's that? That's about accurate.
That's about accurate, yes.
This seems to be a Tavares win all the way. Unless he blows off the fight, unless he doesn't train, unless he gets, you know, run over by a bus on the way to the fight, I would think this is his fight to win.
Yeah, I definitely am with you there. I think we're going to see a buzzsaw win here by Thiago Tavares. Not too much to say there. It should be a good showcase for him.
Yeah.
And then in our main event of the evening, we have Mike Swick making his welterweight debut against Josh Berkman. What do you got?
Josh Berkman. I got Berkman here. I've never been impressed with Swick. I just, you know, especially his fight against Okami, you know, who really doesn't bring a whole lot to the table in terms of finishing you. I wasn't real impressed with Swick at all. Swick's in at about a 3-1 favorite. You know, Berkman, I think Berkman's got the game to beat Swick for sure. You know, he's got an all-around game that's appropriate. He can throw. He's got a decent heart. Currently, he's healthy. I think Berkman's a steal at plus 250 or 260, wherever he's going off at right now. And, I like Berkman a ton in this fight. A ton, just a ton. I don't know what else I can say.
I'm actually with you on this one. I think Berkman is definitely a steal at those odds. I've got him winning the fight as well. I don't have much to add really. I think Berkman's a good pick.
I think for a free card, this is going to be a very fun thing to watch on Wednesday night. No question about it.
Yeah. The nice thing about this card is a lot of times you go into a card and you know what's going to happen. But this one, I really don't. I mean, other than the main event, I think I have a pretty good idea what's going to happen there. I see Berkman probably winning a decision on that one, but I wouldn't be surprised if he submits Swick either.
No,
but yeah,
absolutely
other than that, yeah, other than that, I really don't know what to expect.
A lot of good fights.
Yeah.
A lot of good fights. A lot of good fights. So anywho.
Yeah.
So any thoughts from 79?
79. Gosh,
we sign off.
Back. I got to think back real quick and see. Let's see what happened.
I'm gonna give my year on thoughts on 79.
Yeah.
I kind of pointed out early in the telecast broadcast. The beatdown St. Pierre put on Hughes, I thought was epic. The hip toss he threw to take Hughes down before the finishing armbar was just. Who has ever seen Matt Hughes thrown around like that?
Yeah,
I mean, it's never happened.
Crushed.
Dominated. And I will come out, and I'll throw out a little controversial point that the whole Liddell Silva matchup, that whole fight, I was less than impressed.
Really?
If anything, it showcased. Well, and I'll say, and here's why. I didn't realize how much bigger and how much more reach Liddell had than Silva. I didn't realize how much of a difference there was between them. Like, Silva looked small. And Liddell just looked like he was just picking away, landing his shots. And I give credit to, and Silva's a tough, and we all know
yeah.
that Wanderlei Silva is a tough MF.
Yeah.
And he is. And he took some big blows. But to me, the whole matchup idea of, if this was what people have been waiting for 6 years, it wasn't much of a fight. Because Chuck is much bigger than Silva. And I kind of see that with the Pride fighters that come over, that when they face their UFC counterparts, the UFC guys always seem to be bigger. Like,
yeah.
bigger. Taller, heavier, bigger. And like, I think I posted this, at the forum that, when the bell rang for them to come out for the first round, I knew I had lost already because I had picked Silva. and I just thought to myself, there's no way Silva's beating Liddell because I couldn't see how he was going to get inside Liddell. And, Liddell's takedown defense is legendary. And to Silva's credit, he knocked Chuck down once. It was a good fight. It wasn't a five-star sort of fight I've been seeing all around the internet, but to me anyway.
Well, yeah,
good fight.
I didn't have a fight of the year.
It was Liddell's fight to lose. It really was his fight to lose because he's fighting a guy smaller than him in the cage.
Yeah.
And then the
thing with Silva, though, is he's beaten guys that are bigger than him before. So, I mean,
I understand that.
That's what made me lean towards him. Yeah.
Sean, I did more lean towards him. I had jumped on the bandwagon. There was no leaning at all. I mean, I hopped right on. I didn't question it at all. But, I mean, when I watched the fight, I thought to myself, in the cage, the little guy usually loses, for some reason. And, I mean, and like I say, Chuck did what he had to do to win the fight. And, I kind of went on the goal. I went off on the Goldberg thing earlier in the podcast here. But, Goldberg, Chuck Liddell is back, blah, blah, blah. Well, I still don't think Chuck Liddell can beat, Rampage. I still don't think Chuck Liddell beats Keith Jardine, truthfully. I'm not sure Forrest Griffin all of a sudden, who choked out Mauricio Rua, and I don't care what most people say, Forrest Griffin won that fight. If it went to a decision, he was still winning that fight. I'm not sure Chuck beats Rua. I'm not sure Chuck beats Griffin. I'm not sure Chuck's a top five guy right now in the UFC. Even with this win, I'm not sure Chuck's a top five guy. Just, Keith Jardine showed people the way. You can't tell me Mauricio Rua couldn't leg kick Chuck to death and win a fight. Those are my thoughts. Those are my 10 cents. I know that there's a bunch of people that disagree with me about the fight itself. But to me, it was Chuck Liddell using his reach to beat up Wanderlei Silva and fighting a smart fight and winning the fight.
Yeah, that was certainly what won the fight for Liddell. But I do disagree on the quality of the fight just because I thought it lived up to the hype, just because.
Did you? Why? I'm curious
because you didn't get first or second round knockout. You got both guys slugging it out for three rounds. And I mean, really, when you thought of Liddell versus Silva, you weren't thinking of who's going to be able to, you know, get the other guy down and pound him out. You're thinking, if these two guys stand for three rounds, who's going to be left standing at the end of the day? You know, and, you know, even given Liddell's reach, you know, you wonder, is Liddell going to be able to get inside him? Is Silva going to be able to get inside him? Is he going to be able to, you know, get the clinch and get his knees going? You know, that was the question coming into the fight, and I think, you know, that was what got answered, really. I mean, yeah, it's a couple years late, but, you know, still, you've got a three-round slugfest, and you've got a clear winner. So that's what I thought was up to it.
Let me ask you this, then. If they fought again 8 months from now, 6 months from now, is Wanderlei Silva going to beat Chuck Liddell? Because to me,
I don't know.
I couldn't see how Silva would ever beat Liddell right now. Or not,
I don't know.
Even 3 years ago. It just seems like it almost seemed to me like Silva in the 205. And I mean, here's a guy that's knocked out the current UFC champion twice, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
It makes me wonder how he did it. Honestly, I mean, it's not that I discredit him as a fighter. Clearly, he's a great fighter. I mean, he's got the heart of a lion. There's no question about it. I just wonder how he deals with these guys that are bigger than him and maybe he should be a middleweight. But I'm not sure if he could get to middleweight.
You know, that could be. It's been thrown around anyway. It's been thrown around that he should move down to middleweight. I mean, and obviously this was the tipping point for that to get thrown around was for him to lose to Liddell, surely because of size. You know, I mean, so it's a valid question. You know, I don't know. I know he's with Extreme Couture now, or at least that he trained with Extreme Couture coming up for this fight.
Right.
So maybe he does something different in the next 8 months if he fight again with Extreme Couture than he would have done with Shootbox. And, you know, who knows? Who knows what would happen? There's certainly a strategy to get inside somebody's, you know, inside somebody's reach. You know, but I don't know. I mean, I would never count out Wanderlei Silva against Chuck Liddell again. I mean, we saw him drop Liddell. I mean, who's to say he doesn't catch him again and then be able to pounce on him?
I'm surprised he didn't follow him up. When he knocked Chuck down, I'm surprised he didn't pounce on him. I really am. Because it looked like he hesitated. And I was really, and I'm not sure if that was the rule change from, you know, being able to, you know, jump in with a stomp or what have you, or a soccer kick. But I was shocked to see just the pause. And I think Chuck was a little surprised too.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of that and a little, I think it was a little bit of that and a little bit of he didn't expect him to go down. I don't know. But, But I mean, who's to say that doesn't happen? You know, I mean, in a fight like that where both guys are throwing and both guys are getting caught, I mean, anything can happen there.
Yep. Hey, let me throw another fastball at you. To me, the best light heavyweight on the card on 79 was Leo.
I know where it's going.
Let me throw a little fastball at you. Machida looked great. I mean, I was never a Machida supporter. As you know, I was kind of like, you know, eh. But I still think Soka Ju is a good fighter, like a real good fighter. But Machida made him look bad. I mean, made him look bad. To me, the next light heavyweight matchup that makes sense for Rampage is Lyoto Machida. I mean, Forrest Griffin to me doesn't make sense. I mean, it kind of makes sense from a marketing view, but in terms of legitimate competition, to me the next matchup for Jackson when he's recovered should be Lyoto Machida.
Well, to me, I'll give you my take on that. I think you're absolutely right that Machida made Soka Ju look bad. I think you're right that Soka Ju is still a good fighter. I think that Jackson's next opponent should have been Keith Jardine, but the Ultimate Fighter show kind of threw a wrench in that because you're going to have – if you have a choice between throwing Griffin or Jardine on there as a coach, you're going to pick Griffin every time.
Right.
So I understand why they did it, I disagree again with holding the title hostage during that show, but, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. But anyway, getting back to your point, Machida, I think the reason he's not the heir apparent right now is because he needs one more win over a top-tier UFC light heavyweight. That being, if they make the fight, Tito Ortiz.
To me, that's not, but Tito Ortiz right now, to me, is not a top-tier light heavyweight.
I agree. But
he's a name. He's a name.
But,
he's a name.
Yeah, he's a name. He's a that's, name. That's the key. That's the key. I mean, really, if Machida were to beat Tito Ortiz, then that would pretty much be, I mean, Tito Ortiz is always going to be a draw, but that might put the, you know, the proverbial nail in the coffin for his contendership, at least for the foreseeable future, and it would also catapult Machida into immediate contention.
I'm convinced Machida can beat anybody in the light heavyweight division right now. Period.
Hard to argue. It's hard to argue that.
Period. I mean, to me, Machida Ortiz, blah. I think it's almost a no-win situation for Machida. If he wins, he's supposed to. If he loses, it's Tito Ortiz who hasn't beaten anybody outside of Ken Shamrock in forever.
Well, I mean, you know,
that's my take. I mean, that's what I, you know.
Yeah, we can say he's supposed to win the fight, and he should be Tito Ortiz, because Tito Ortiz's game plan, like you said before, is to get you down and elbow the frick out of you, and he just wouldn't do that to Machida. And if you can't, if Tito can't do that, then, you know, he just doesn't win.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, Machida should win that fight. But at the same time, I think if he does win, you know, in the eyes of, you know, the casual fan, which is who counts, then he's a title contender.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, the UFC brass obviously sees it the same way that, you know, the hardcores do, because they, you know, they're right there. You know, they know that Machida is ready for pretty much anybody, but if they throw him in there in a title match, a lot of people are going to be like, what's this guy doing? I mean, honestly, he's only been on one main card fight.
That's right.
No, two. Two.
He is the John Fitch of the light heavyweight division.
Yeah, in a way. I think Fitch was more exciting all the way through, though. Machida, if this is an indicator of how his future fights are going to be, I think that was his coming out party. I mean, if he's going to fight like that, then he could be, I mean, if he can be Rampage and fight and keep fighting like that, he could be on top of the division for a long time.
That's true. I think he finally heard the criticism.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, like I said, I mean, I thought Sokaju, I still think that he's a very good fighter. And I was kind of surprised they just threw him in there against Machida off the get-go, because he looked completely outclassed against Machida.
Yeah.
And here's a guy that just knocked out two perennial top 10 heavyweights in the last year. Knocked him out. I mean.
Yeah. And that, you know, that having been said, he was outclassed, but I think it was, I don't think it was a bad match to make. Because, you know, it ended up being, you know, making Sokaju look bad, but at the same time, you want to see what he's got, and you also want to see what Machida can do against somebody that's going to push the pace, somebody that's going to try and catch him. And the impressive thing about Machida in that fight was that he was every bit as elusive, every bit as hard to catch, but he was still exciting.
Yeah, Sokaju couldn't get near him. I mean, it was amazing.
No.
I mean, like I said, big props to Machida.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, our fellow columnist Joshua Burrell took me to task on it, but it was the right call, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Anything else from 79 or from 2007 for that matter? What was your fight of the year 2007? I know we're late on this, but what do you think?
It was a good year. I think for the most part, the closing weekend of the year was New Year's Eve. I mean, we didn't even touch on the IFL Grand Prix or the Yaranoka card, which was difficult to find on this side of the ocean anyway. It was a good year for MMA, and I think I am looking forward to 08. I think that it is going to become more mainstream. I think that the UFC, anyway, has champions in place who are dominant champions, and I think if you're going to break into the mainstream, you need people that are mainstream-style champions. I'm surprised that they have really not marketed Quentin Jackson more. I think that is the one failing I see out of the UFC right now, is that Quentin Jackson is a marketable, talented, social figure who currently is your light heavyweight champion. And
although that having been said, they are going to put him on the Ultimate Fighter. So,
that's the Ultimate Fighter. I'm saying, you know, when you watch the cards, they flash to him briefly, but, like, you know, Quentin Jackson should be with the broadcast team.
Yeah, he should at least be doing
interviews. Quentin Jackson should be doing interviews. Quentin Jackson, yeah. I should see Quentin Jackson. I should see him, like when they're pumping a card, I should see him on the daytime interview shows. I should see him, you know, on Regis and Kathy Lee. I should see him around. I should see interviews with him for ESPN. Even if he's not fighting, if there's light heavyweights on the card, Quentin Jackson should be interviewed because he's talented that way. You know, he's a presence, and he currently is one of your four champions, and probably, quite honestly, out of the five champions,
yeah.
Not counting the one that resigned,
right.
You know, he's the one that probably is the most avowably marketable to the U.S. audience. You know, I mean, out of the four. I mean, he has the benefits of being American, you know, communicates well in English.
Yeah.
And is
easily marketable. Yeah.
Easily marketable. And mainstream. I mean, Quentin Jackson just has a mainstream appeal to him.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a little disappointed there. But, you know, this year is young and maybe things will change. There's still time.
Yeah.
So I am looking forward to the next couple cards. I'm looking forward to seeing Brock Lesnar debut. I think that he's got a lot of talent. I'm not sure he's beating Frank Mir, truthfully. But I think he's got a great shot, too.
Yeah. It's definitely an intriguing fight. I think we'll go in depth on that on our UFC 81 preview, which will be coming up.
Are we doing an 81 preview?
Absolutely. We're back on track now. We've got to get back in the habit now, right?
That's right. To both of our fans who have been disappointed in our long delay, we're back. We'll be filling the air with podcasts.
Yes. What was I going to say? Oh, fight of the year. What do you have for fight of the year to put you on the spot?
Oh, man. I am still going to go with Gomi and Diaz from Pride 34.
Mm-hmm. 33.
I am still going to go. I mean, there are so many that were good. But I'm still going to go with Gomi Diaz only because I thought it was a landmark fight with somebody in Nick Diaz, who was a UFC cast-off against the golden boy of the Pride promotion. And I still find it hard to believe that, you know, Diaz was completely high for the fight and yet won with a Gogo Plata. Whatever. The fact is, you know, I watched the fight, and when I say it was a landmark fight, you know, at the time, there was such a UFC versus Pride atmosphere surrounding each card as it came out. And for Diaz to come in and submit Gomi, I thought was, and especially the fight itself, I mean, it was just a fantastic fight from start to finish. I mean, you know, we were talking a little bit about Gonzaga, you know, gassing early. You know, Gomi looked like he took Diaz lightly and paid for it, probably in the worst way. But it kind of exposed Pride in the sense that, you know, here's your lightweight champion, essentially. But, you know, the sense of non-title bouts. I mean, we don't have non-title bouts in the UFC. I mean, if the champion's fighting, the belt is on the line.
Yeah.
And to me, and so really, I thought was a statement on the state of mainstream MMA, such as it is. And it was a huge win. It was a fantastic fight. And that was my fight of the year.
Yep. I'll tell you, that's in my top picks. I'll tell you why it's not my fight of the year. I thought it was a tremendous fight, great fight, a lot of fun to watch. But I thought Gomi went in there with the worst possible game plan against Nick Diaz. you know, I'm going to let myself get hit and then try and set him up for something, or just the phrase, let myself get hit, because that's what he did, dropped his guard and got destroyed.
Yep.
But, you know, that having been said, great fight. My fight of the year actually happened towards the end, and it was Roger Huerta and Clay Guida. I just thought that was
that's my number two.
Tremendous fight.
Fantastic fight.
Great fight. Because you get the back and forth, you get Guida almost winning with that uppercut that dropped Huerta in the second round. You get good action on the
Sean,
feet, good action on the ground.
I thought it was over when Guida hit him. I thought, and then he pounced on him. Guida didn't wait. he was all over him, and he couldn't finish. And right there, when I saw Huerta survive that, I thought, here's a guy that will be a lightweight contender soon. Because
yeah.
Guida put the pressure right, didn't back off, jumped right on.
Yeah, had him in a vice the whole time.
Oh.
Yeah, and then you also get the submission win. I mean, didn't go to decision. It went into the third round. You had action all the way through. I thought it was fight of the year. And really, in 07, give me a fight of the year candidate, or give me two fight of the year candidates that weren't from lightweights. I mean, 2007 was the year.
Yeah, right.
You know, you had Henderson.
I'll give you two. Jackson Henderson, certainly for the light heavyweight title. And then the second one I would throw you is the St. Pierre Hughes third fight, which may not have been like the most competitive fight of the year, but I thought it was a legacy-making fight.
I'll give you that.
A changing of the guard fight. Not so much a changing of the guard fight, but the game has changed sort of fight. I thought it was an important fight in the history of the UFC. Because the way he got beat down by St. Pierre, and again, Hughes is a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always so many legends in MMA. You know, I mean, there's the Gracies and your Shamrocks, and, you know, Matt Hughes is a name that is legendary. And St. Pierre beat him down. I mean,
yeah.
It was from the very ring of the first round, St. Pierre was going to beat him down, and he did. And, I mean, the finishing sequence was just brutal.
Yep.
So that would be a contender. But,
yeah.
But I agree with you. I agree with your point. Lightweights make fight of the year.
It's funny that you mentioned
the
that.
The Huerta fight was fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, the kind of the new guard taking out the old guard with St. Pierre and Hughes, because if you remember, about 20 UFCs back now, it was Hughes and Gracie. It was kind of the same thing. It was, you know, Hughes.
And it was.
Yeah, Hughes being the newer generation, taking out Gracie, who was always one-dimensional.
DC's my house.
You know,
I build it.
What's that?
DC's my house. I build it.
Yes. Yeah.
I build this house.
Yeah. And then you got Hughes coming in there who, you know, Hughes, as you said, is a legend. Great, great, great fighter. Top five in the welterweight division. But semi-one-dimensional. So good at that one dimension that nobody could beat him. But still pretty one-dimensional. And then St. Pierre comes in there, you know, your consummate athlete, your vicious striker and your natural wrestler, that comes in and beats Hughes at his own game. Not only beats him in his own game, but taps him out easily. And, you know,
right.
Just amazing. St. Pierre is a monster.
Someday, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, we will look back at that fight as his coming out party.
Yeah.
As his reemergence after the upset loss to Sarah, after the, you know, the win against Koscheck was impressive. The beatdown of Hughes was legendary.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a beatdown.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, I mean, Hughes comes out for the post conference and his left eye is all swollen and, you know, I mean, he's got beat up. I mean,
and the other, you know, the other thing,
I mean, and the video clip of him verbally, he didn't tap, he verbally tapped.
I'm tapping.
I mean,
yes, I'm tapping.
I'm tapping. You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
it's legendary.
Yeah, and also the fact that Hughes after the fight didn't say. You know, didn't say George was the better fighter tonight. He said George is the better fighter.
Period. Yeah, period. You know, and it's like, all right. You know, I mean, it's right there. But I would agree that my top two fights, like I said, my top fight was Gomi Diaz, but the close second was Guida Huerta. I mean, that was. Oh.
And
I'm a Clay Guida fan. I mark Guida. I can't help it. I just do. And I unashamedly admit I was rooting for Guida the entire fight. But at the end of the night, I was like, it's hard not to be a fan of Roger Huerta.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, because I still think Guida would give, like Clay Guida, I think, would give BJ Penn a run for his money. I don't think he'd win.
Yeah.
But I think he'd make Penn work.
He'd definitely keep him
busy, and he'd make Penn work for a win. And I think I think it'd be fun to watch. I'm not sure he'd win. Huerta, I think eventually he'll be right in that class with Stevenson battling for the title.
Yeah, you know another guy that we're going to have to start looking out for, speaking of the lightweights, you know, Tyson Griffin had a great year. Also,
yeah, he did.
Frankie Edgar is a guy that you're going to have to start watching out.
I know, Frankie Edgar. He's coming back to haunt us.
Yeah. He's a guy you don't think about all that often, but, I mean, the way he that fight against Tyson Griffin is definitely top two or three fights for me of the year. And, beat down Spencer Fisher.
Yes, he did. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yes, he did. Not to go too far off topic, then, I guess, from what I understand, the UFC has been talking to Gomi and, a couple other formerly Pride lightweights about signing out with the UFC.
Yeah, I'll give you my wishes for 2008 in the lightweight class. Gomi, Gilbert Melendez, and Kawajiri. Guys in the lightweight class.
You might get Gilbert Melendez.
What's that?
I don't know. I've seen some of Gomi's fights on YouTube and, you know, whatnot. I'm not sure Gomi's a big contender in 155 in the UFC.
I'm not either, but I want to see.
I'd like to see Gilbert Melendez, on the other hand.
Ooh.
I think would really make it interesting.
Yeah.
Really make
it interesting. Also, I'll give you another wish for 2008. I don't know how much of the WEC you watch, but Kid Yamamoto.
I watched more. Yeah.
Kid Yamamoto. Guy who fights in Shooto. 145 guy.
Yep.
Man, I want to see him fight Uriah Faber.
Yep.
Oh, I want to see that fight.
Here's what let me throw a couple of my wishes back at you.
Yeah.
I would like to see the heavyweight division become more competitive and more popular.
Yeah.
I would like to see the heavyweight division, because when I was a kid, heavyweight boxing was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even as a young adult, you know, you bought cards to watch the heavyweights fight. And I think there's nothing like watching a couple good heavyweights go at it in a good fight, especially, you know, now with mixed martial arts. I want to see some good heavyweight fights. I want to see the UFC reinvigorate their heavyweight division. Because if they don't, I would rather see them, truthfully, and again, I know this isn't going to happen, but if they can't reinvigorate the heavyweight division, I would rather see them bring in a women's 135-pound division and watch them fight. Because to me, you know, I've watched my share of women's MMA. Mm-hmm. And I would rather watch 135-pound women fight than 240-pound guys plod around the ring. And I just prefer one way or the other. So that's my wish for 2008.
Yeah, I think if you're going to see women's MMA under the Zuffa banner, it'll be probably the WEC rather than the UFC.
Okay, well, you're not going to see it under WEC either. You're going to see it under the IFL maybe someday.
Right.
Or you're going to see it
under
HBN, Zuffa. Or you're going to see under Cage Rage, not Cage Rage, Elite XC.
Elite XC, the Pro
Elite. Yeah. That's where you're going to see it. You're not going to see it under the Zuffa banner. It's a shame because, I mean, like I said, we talked about this card. We just watched UFC 80. Really no names there. BJ Penn and everybody else is kind of, eh. But it was a great card. Why was it a great card? A lot of action.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, action is not limited to name fighters.
Oh, yeah,
anyway,
I agree.
I digress.
Well,
anyway.
We're clocking in right about 2 hours here. I think we'll probably split this podcast up into two parts so it's a little bit more manageable for the masses.
Absolutely.
Or for the one or two people that are gonna listen. But we'll we can call it a day there, and you and I will have to synchronize our schedules and get in on some regular recording, because this is always good times.
Absolutely, it is a good time. Always a good time, Sean. Always a good time.
Any parting shots before we call it a day?
Not a single one. Well, actually, I take that back. To those of you that are listening, please be advised that our prediction and betting contests are open to the public. We want you to join. We want you to participate. It's free, and we'll give you some internet notoriety to go along with it, because it's no fun if Torch columnists like myself, are always the number one contender. Anyway, so log on to MMATorch.com and get involved. And Happy New Year to all of the listeners out there.
I will second that. And also, if you don't get involved and beat us, then it will just give us that much bigger heads. So nobody needs that. Good. So I don't think I have anything else to say. I've been inactive in the column department lately. You know, December and January are a busy time in my line of work. But right around February, I've got some things headed your way. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we're going to try and get these podcasts back up to weekly. Thanks for listening. For Jerry Cataline, this is Sean
Hess. Welcome back.